Welcome to the Inside Out Show. I'm Devin Almonte, and together we are learning to see the world through God's eyes, doing our best to live that out in our everyday. Every Thursday here, we take a look at the stories that are shaping our world, the funny, the feel good, the frustrating, and the faith enhancing. It's a bit of faith, culture, real life, all delivered with warmth, clarity, and a bit of humor. This is Inside Out Thursday edition. Welcome. All right. Well, today we are exploring what it means to guard the truth in a world of distortion. We have to look no further than social media for that. I have a story to share with you that got a little out of hand with some false information floating around. We'll talk about a new building that just went up in the UK. It's beautiful, actually, very modern, very efficient, serves the community well, but it might be missing a few things. And before we get into that, as we always do, we'll start with our anchor point to ground us in truth before we jump into the rest of the show. Have you ever played the game of telephone where the message, the initial message, gets so twisted by the time it reaches the last person, it's like a totally different story? That's similar to what happened in our community recently. And it was sad. Everybody's okay. But a local man, older gentleman, he had a car accident. And in the midst of the chaos, he had his two dogs with him. One of them stayed, but the other one, I guess, just fled the scene, panicked. And the story spread on social media. There were real-time updates from like all over town. I saw the dog here, and now it's on this street. It's over there. But these people were the witnesses to the story. Some people saw the accident. Some people saw the dog leave. Some people saw the dog on the road. But what happens as the story goes out a little further, especially on social media, we add all these layers to the story. And then there are people that are commenting that weren't actually a witness. They're not part of the story. And new people read their comments and new people read those new comments. And it just keeps going that you might have a different story. Maybe the story is that this man hit the dog. He doesn't like dogs. And he hit the dog with his car and the dog luckily ran away and is okay. Or it was a man that was trying to steal the dog and somebody crashed into him to prevent him from stealing the dog. Two new stories off of the original. It's so easy for us to get away from the original source, the original story, what really happened. Going back to the facts of what took place, especially when it comes to our beliefs. Before we know it, we have created stories outside of the original story, like the Bible. We might find ourselves adding to it, subtracting from it, or listening to stories that stretch a little far from what God actually says in his word. It's kind of like the serpent. Did God really say to not eat of that tree? I don't know. See, story starts to change and we know what happens there. We listen to that other voice and then we find ourselves quite far from the truth. A couple more weeks before Halloween. Halloween is on a Friday this year. And so I'm sure many of us are going to be out trick-or-treating. You're going to see all the decorations and the bats that might pop up on the porches with sound effects. People go all out now. But there's a bit of a delusion when it comes to our little friend, the bat. We picture them as these scary, creepy, screeching rodents, just these awful creatures sounding something like this. So that sounds a little eerie and creepy, but that's not giving us the whole picture. This is what we should be playing. That doesn't sound so creepy. That sounds beautiful. It is a bat love song. There has been study after study around the bats and their music that they make. Not screeching, but literally singing straight from their heart to capture the attention of a lady or two. And this is pretty wild too. You might think that you hear the sound of a crying baby, but it could actually be a baby bat. I'll let you look up the sound effects on that one on your own. All right, let's shift gears a little bit here. We're going to get to the heart of today's show. It's a story about design, architecture, literally falls into place here, and what we are quietly, slowly removing to make room for everything else. A housing development in the UK just won a top prize for their architecture. This is not a super luxury building, skyscraper, mansion of sorts, but it is a modern almshouse. It's called the Appleby Blue Almshouse, which is in South London, right in the city. And it took home the Reba Sterling Prize, which is the Royal Institute of British Architects. And they won this awesome award for what the judges refer to as a aspirational living environment. Pretty awesome, especially when we think of housing for seniors or elderly. We don't really think of these amazingly designed facilities. We think of kind of just your standard nursing home care, assisted living, homeless shelter kind of environments, but not here. The complex has 59 subsidized flats for low-income residents that are over 65. It has a roof garden. It has a courtyard, cooking school, tons of shared spaces that have a lot of light. The architects behind this said that they wanted to reimagine what the almshouse could be, and they certainly did. I watched the whole video. I'll put the links in here for you because it's beautiful. It's like a modern take, modern revival of the almshouse, except I would say that there's some major differences. So an almshouse, just to give you a little background, it's deeply rooted in the Christian faith. That's kind of, they came out of the Christian faith, and they weren't just a response to poverty, although there was this, it was also built into that was a response to Christ, what we're called to do as believers in helping the poor, helping those in need. And so these homes were often built by the churches and guilds, maybe some private benefactors. And the overarching goal was to help people flourish as a whole person, spiritually, physically, emotionally, mentally, the whole thing. And that was done by showing mercy and compassion for those that came into these homes. You can look through the Bible. The word alms, A-L-M-S, is throughout the Old Testament. It's in the New Testament, in the King James Version. And it really means to give money or goods to those in need as an act of mercy and compassion. What's neat about this too, I didn't know this. The traditional almshouses, they were in many different shapes, but the main shape to these buildings, they would be in like a U-shape or a C-shape so that they center around a central courtyard and they have the chapel there. So the chapel is typically visible from all of the rooms or flats. That was intentional because the chapel and that courtyard area was really the anchor of the almshouse because it's to remind the people that were staying there that their lives weren't just valuable, they were eternal. And so that was the message that they wanted to give through acts of mercy and compassion. That model is still active and alive today, which is amazing to me because this thing is centuries old. The Hospital of St. Cross in Winchester, they refer to it as England's oldest and most perfect almshouse. Okay, this was built in the 12th century, still houses residents today. They call these residents brothers. They're not necessarily like a priest or a pastor. They're laymen. But they do wear the traditional black robes. They attend services and they live within this community that is shaped by centuries of worship and care. St. Cross still has one of England's oldest traditions. I just love this. I think this is awesome.
Well, I'm Brother John. I am one of the brothers of the Hospital of St. Cross. I wear the black gown because we go back to our original foundation, which is accepted as 1132. Although it's an almshouse, we are open to the public. We have our 100 men's hall where you can have coffee and refreshment. But if you ask for the wayfarer's dole at the Porter's Lodge, you will still get a taste of beer and a piece of bread, which goes back almost 900 years to our foundation.
So that's it. That's what he's talking about. It's called the Wayfarer's Dole. And to this day, with the practice, which has been in existence for 900 years, you can walk up to the Porter's Lodge if you're a traveler or visiting, and you can get a small piece of bread and a cup of ale and be on your way. And that is one of the things that they have done since the very beginning. And it is just a beautiful place. The buildings are beautiful. It's out in the country. There's a lot of green around. It's just, it looks like a place of refuge and retreat. But what I love about it is that even with all those wonderful things, the most important element to this, or the foundational part, is that it is really built from that vertical relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ. It comes from that heartbeat. Like, that is the rhythm of that structure. Many of them work there. Some of them work in town. They do odd jobs, things of that nature, to keep themselves busy and to be a contributing member to society. It's social and spiritual, with, I'd say, the chapel as an architectural focus. But now we've got the garden, because what Appleby Blue has done is they have redesigned the center. They have reimagined the sacred, modernized the almshouse. And whether they meant to or not, something did shift. Listen.
Appleby Blue is a new imagination of what older persons living in central London, of how we can create a place to give people a good life, a better quality of life, even people who don't have a lot of choices. We wanted somewhere where people wanted to move to rather than be forced to because of a crisis in their lives. And we felt that by doing it through really good design, a great location, and providing really excellent services, people will move here because they want to.
The arrangement is based on a traditional almshouse. And what we did is we flipped that idea around, and we put the accommodation for residents around the back of the site and the sides. And at the front, we put the shared rooms. And then on top of those, another C-shaped arrangement, which sits above, creating at the centre a kind of garden court, which the rooms all look into.
It really is amazing. The garden is beautiful. It's peaceful. It promotes flourishing in a, I mean, what appears to be a very real way. It invites people outside into the city and have conversations with your neighbors. So I think all of that is hugely important. All the things that, you know, we might see here in an assisted living or nursing home, where you've got the cooking classes, a craft room, a cafe, all the things to draw people in that they can visit, and you can be with kids and younger people and families. But what just stood out to me with this new modern almshouse is that there was no chapel. The central focus seems to be on the garden that everybody can see and on the community. I just saw this as like a deeper reordering of priorities, where over the years, there has been a shift from that vertical, eternal focus to a horizontal, outward, earthly-centered focus. Maybe I'm making more out of this than there needs to be, but it crossed my mind. So now I'm sharing it. And I was looking into this and I thought, whoa, like, there has been a big directional change in how traditional almshouses operated and how they worked and who took them over. It just goes on, and just seeing these little shifts with some of these more modern style almshousing, what has changed?
You've got natural materials everywhere. You have the use of wood in all the walkways. You have quarry tiles for flooring. It just makes it feel like a home. The communal spaces form such a key part of this building, and we invite other organisations to do activities which engage our older people. So they could be toddler groups, where you have mums and dads who feel isolated themselves, and they come into this building and they can meet some of the older people who live here.
the beautiful moment is where those two communities come together, which means we can look at opportunities for mitigating loneliness and getting residents involved with other groups and other activities that they may otherwise not have done.
Sociability is built right into the heart of this building. People can engage with each other at varying degrees. They can meet people from outside, or they can meet their fellow neighbours, or they can sit in their walkways outside their homes, or you can look out into the street and just see life going by.
I get to sit there and peep on my neighbours. So I enjoy that.
I'm not trying to knock this modern almshouse. The residents seem happy. The space feels alive. I love the idea of keeping people connected to culture and community rather than tucked away. I think that's really nice. We need places like this that reflect the world that we live in now. But I do get concerned when I see the anchor start to slip. And I feel like you're seeing that here, because the very thing that once held all of this together was Christ, the source, the center. That's the reason these places were built in the first place. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they do have a chapel. They just haven't advertised it. I looked everywhere trying to find it. I don't think they do. And so with all of these little subtle changes and shifts in who's running it, and there's no more chapel, no more worship, I find myself wondering what happens in the future and in the present. What happens to these places when we remove the holy? Because we've seen that here in the States. Look at our schools. When we took Christ out of our schools, look at our hospitals, look at the places where formation in our faith and spiritual lives once happened, and now it's not. What does that look like now in our neighborhoods? And so while you see this place and everybody's excited and the residents are happy and all of these things are great, and I do think it's great, but it's missing something. Because when the sacred center is no longer a part of the design, then what have we redesigned? We see that happening all around us. When you look at here in the United States, again, just what churches used to look like. So out came the pews. Steeples are gone, right? They're too much to maintain. We just don't design things that way anymore. So we don't see them as much. The church bells are a lot quieter these days. And so we modernize. Not all of that is bad, but when we do it to be relevant, that's where I think we need to be a little careful.
You know, and this maybe isn't a critique on the faith as much. It's just people aren't attending your physical building as much as they used to. And if we see these trends continue, like you said, that number from the 90s in about 50 years is going to get cut in half. So what are we going to do?
And what we're critiquing here, which was the aim at all costs to be relevant.
Yeah.
And I was really struggling with what we were doing and it coming in really confrontation with my theological views that we're kind of hitting on here with what church was supposed to be. I was like, what are we doing here? Like, oh, a nice, cool stage design.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a cooler pro presenter font.
Yes, that's what we're seeing. A lot of that where churches are trying to modernize to be relevant. Fog machines, LED lights, coffee shops, giant welcome centers. I've been involved in churches that are like that to some degree. Thankfully, no fog machines. But some of that, if you are doing it, at least I believe, purposely built on the foundation of Christ, and that is the anchor around those things to be a witness to Christ through some of those more modern means, I think that's okay. It's kind of like when, you know, people are using their phone in church as opposed to flipping through the Bible. Yes, I always think it's great to go to the physical paper word and be able to flip through the different books. But if we're in church and we want a reference and to highlight and look things up on the phone, that's just a modern technology that I think is beneficial to many people. We're now wondering how we got here, because you can hear the message that has changed. And I'm talking not so much about the alms housing, but just in general with our faith, that we've changed our wording in churches as well, where it's you matter rather than you are his. And that might seem like we're nitpicking here, but I think it matters, because if we focus so much on you matter and you're important and you're valued, yes, but in what context? In the context of Jesus Christ, who died on the cross to save you from your sins. You are his. One anchors us in eternity. The other affirms us in the moment. So whether that is the almshouse or a church or a chapel or a city plan, whatever we center our lives on is going to shape who we are and what matters. And that, all of that, is really reverence for culture, not for Christ. So where are we doing this in our own lives? And it's always harder to look at ourselves. It's very easy to go out and look at all the things that the world's doing and just say, oh no, we're headed in the wrong direction. But where in our own lives are we headed in the wrong direction? Where have we quietly, subtly removed the steeple from our schedules or the church bells? I love the church bells. I would love to see more church bells around and hear them. I can't remember the last time I heard church bells, but where have we removed those church bells from our weekly routine? Or the chapel? Is it present in how we parent or how we pray? We just, over time, started to replace those things. We got busier. We made room for new things. And then slowly we start to push out those old grounding anchors in our life. So here's what I want to do. And I want you to hopefully do this with me so that I don't have to do it alone. Just walk through your own life right now. Look at your life and your physical things that you have around you. What is at the center? Is it the garden, like at the Applebee's almshouse? Or is your life more like the chapel, the kind of place that continuously just lifts our eyes up vertically back to Christ? Most days, my life looks a lot more like Applebee than St. Cross, the original almshouse with the chapel and the bread and the ale that is still given out to this day. So maybe that's our wake-up call. We've upgraded a lot over these past few years, and that's not slowing down. But let's just make sure that we haven't downgraded the holy. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for spending some time with me. If this episode helped you tune out some of the noise and turn you back to what's true, I hope you take that with you this week. Not everything obviously has to change overnight, but as we become more aware and in tune to these things, it's one small shift toward holy that matters. Don't forget, wherever you listen, please leave a review of the show, like the show, share it with a friend. Getting that out really helps the algorithms, helps it get seen. So I really appreciate that, especially as the focus of this is ministry-based, and I'm just grateful to be with you. So I will see you next time. And until then, let's think differently, let's choose wisely, and live our lives inside out.